Mr. Ryan Bowen, good morning again.
Good morning, John.
Today you're in Madison, Florida, and are trying to get to Georgia on your way to Washington, D.C., and the inauguration of Barack Obama. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Since we last spoke, you have gone another 1,000 miles, been hit by a Jeep, which gave you a bruise on your leg, you lost your GPS, and you spent New Year's in New Orleans, right?
That's right.
So I gather you're still pretty determined to get to the inauguration.
Absolutely.
Have you found a place to stay in D.C. when you get there?
I got a couple places.
Nice. You didn't have any place when we talked last. So, Ryan, you know, you've had some setbacks. You still have to get through the wintry weather as you head north. What is it, if for some reason you don't make it, America as a nation is going to lose if you don't get to the inauguration?
America's not going to lose a thing because I'm determined to get there. The movement's already started, and there's nothing going to hold us back.
Ryan, have you thought about applying for Secretary of Commerce? You know, that's suddenly available.
Hey, that sounds great.
Never underestimate what can be accomplished by one man in America with a bicycle and a cell phone. On The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Monday, January 5th, and hats off to Ryan Bowen. This
Yo,
is a
Ryan.
Kid on his bicycle, yeah. Starting off in Los Angeles and biking all the way to D.C. 85 miles a day he's been averaging so far.
Now, we're going to talk to him as he's doing his stretches, I think, before he starts pedaling.
Exactly. Also today, the latest on the Israeli ground offensive in Gaza, the Obama inauguration, and business schools. Well, they're changing to fit the times. Those stories are coming up first, these headlines.
As we just mentioned to Ryan, there is a new vacancy in the Obama cabinet. Commerce Secretary pick Governor Bill Richardson is pulling out. He's under investigation for dealings with a campaign contributor. Both Richardson and the contributor deny any pay for play took place. No shortage of drama in the Senate either. Illinois Senate appointee Roland Burris is headed to Washington, and he's speaking out about controversial Governor Ron Blagojevich.
I'm not in any way backing up or supporting or endorsing the governor's action.
Except, of course, the action of appointing Burris to the Senate. He's endorsing that and threatening to sue if he's not sworn in.
Overseas, the fighting in Gaza between Israel and Hamas is likely to get more intense, say many, as Israeli ground troops move into denser areas. Israeli government spokesman Mark Regev says they are prepared to lose soldiers in tough urban combat.
Israeli soldiers are currently in combat operations in Gaza, and we know that we will take casualties. We didn't enter this operation because we wanted to. We entered this operation because we had to.
Hamas promises a fierce fight as the battle turns to house fighting. Grueling, challenging, long, those words describe triathlon, some Russian literature, and, well, the Minnesota Senate race. Today, the state canvassing board will declare the results. Democrat Al Franken holds a 225-vote lead over Republican incumbent Norm Coleman. But no winner yet. Candidates have a week to challenge the results. Coleman's team has hinted he will.
Staying in politics, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine will lead the Democratic Party. Wall Street starts its first week of trading. Above 9,900, the Dow and the S&P both on up above there. So, you know, business schools and the financial meltdown. If you were going to business school today, what would you want to learn? A lesson from business school for this financial crisis. 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. We'll explain.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org, and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. We begin in the Middle East. A ground offensive, more diplomacy, little reaction from the Obama transition, and seeming support for Israel from the Bush administration. Those were among the developments this weekend in the conflict between Hamas and Israel. French President Nicolas Sarkozy is set to meet with Israeli and Palestinian leaders today. Ethan Bronner is the Jerusalem bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. When we caught up with him this morning, he was fixing a flat tire and on the road to Gaza in a Jeep. Ethan, when do you expect to get to Gaza?
John, I'm in the first pool of reporters that has been told that we're being permitted to go in about an hour. There's been a lot of pressure on the Israeli government and military to let foreign journalists in, which they have not done for the last 2 months mostly, and certainly not at all during the 9 days of the conflict. So that's where we're headed.
So based on your reporting and what you were able to see over the weekend, it appears there is a network of checkpoints within the Gaza territory that divides it up roughly north-south and vaguely east-west. Can you explain?
Well, I mean, this is simply a kind of divide-and-conquer system. There, in terms of the north-south roads and the east-west roads, the roads that the Israelis had also been involved in building when there were settlements in there, this is a way, of course, of cutting sections off from each other and then that way trying to control them.
Now, is there any sense that the opening of the roads and the creation of these checkpoints is going to facilitate aid getting into Gaza, or is that a completely different question?
That is a good question, and I don't know the answer. It seems to me that the aid is coming in through the checkpoints that the Israelis have outside of Gaza, and then the question would be getting them to the hospitals and to the warehouses and so on. And it may be that the checkpoints will help. I'm unaware of whether that's the case.
Right, and we'll just have to see. So psychologically, what is the significance of having Israeli boots on the ground in Gaza once again in the middle of this crisis?
Well, of course, there are two psychologies we're discussing. One is the Israeli and the other is the Palestinians in Gaza. I would say that from the Palestinian in Gaza, the psychology, at least the desire for it, what Israel wants to send as a message is to say, we will go to all lengths to stop the rocket fire and to break the military infrastructure of Hamas. Within Israel, the argument is that we, again, the similar sort of thing. We are going to stand up for what we believe in and go all the way to put our young men in harm's way. So that's clearly the message that's being sent. The issue is whether there will be actual combat for days on end or whether the hope is to send this message and then work out a diplomatic ceasefire in the coming days. And I don't know.
From the perspective of people you speak with in Israel, Ethan, on the one hand, definitely going in and dealing with the rocket fire directly is, something that I'm sure there's a lot of enthusiasm for. But as time goes on, there's probably a disheartening sense that here we go again with a more or less open-ended commitment inside a territory that we don't like being in. Can you define what the parameters of quagmire are at this moment in Israel?
It's a great question, and I think that, again, we're back to psychology. The issue is, for Israelis, a sense that their enemies had taken the view in recent years that they had lost the appetite for this kind of combat. And even though, and in particular because of what happened in 2006 in southern Lebanon, viewed essentially as an Israeli defeat, the worry in a way has doubled, which is that organizations like Hamas will take the view that Israel doesn't have the stomach for such a battle. So Israelis, I would say 80% of the country, feels very strongly in favor of this endeavor. Now, when will they start to lose the stomach for it? Clearly, if casualties are high and as it drags on. But we're talking about now the second day of ground combat, so I think it's very early to talk about that level of fatigue. There are voices, mostly on the left, saying, okay, we've made our point, now let's work vigorously for a diplomatic solution. The suffering in Gaza is too great. The risk to our soldiers is too great. We need a diplomatic solution. But the broad sentiment in the country is, let's take this a little further.
Ethan Bronner, final question. Any sense that this is timed to precede the inauguration of Barack Obama?
I don't think that we could point to anything specific to that, but I think that it is very, very likely that the Israelis saw that once the administration shifts in the United States, it's likely to have less patience and less latitude for such an endeavor. The Bush administration has been extremely understanding, if you like, from Israel's perspective about what it's doing, and it's unlikely that the Obama administration would be quite so much. So I do think there is a sense that this needs to end by the inauguration.
Well, a last chance, and the Israelis seem to be taking it in the waning hours of the Bush administration. Ethan Bronner, Jerusalem Bureau Chief for the New York Times, thanks for joining us on the road to Gaza.
Thank you, John.
Now back here in the U.S., today marks the first session of the 111th Congress, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid knows he's got a full plate of very serious issues.
I'm an old trial lawyer. There's always room to negotiate.
That's Reid on Meet the Press yesterday, talking about the controversial appointment made by the embattled Illinois governor to fill President-elect Barack Obama's vacant seat. Todd Zwillick, reporter from Capital News Connection, joins us from Washington. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, good morning.
A lot of things to get to, but let's start with just the actual formation of the Senate itself. There is all of that controversy over the appointment of Roland Burris. Is he going to be seated in the Senate?
No one knows. No one knows. No one knows if or when. Word is he plans to be here in Washington late this afternoon or tonight. He has said he will show up on Tuesday and try to get seated. That doesn't mean he necessarily will. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, who is the assistant majority leader, the majority whip, has said that he and Reid will meet with Burris on Wednesday, which is a day after the 111th convenes. They actually convene tomorrow. So the answer, Adora, is that nobody really knows what's going to happen or how confrontational this will be.
So drama on that front, and we'll have to wait, especially for congressional watchers. Let's move, though, to you have a couple of Senate seats, Senator Clinton, Senator Salazar, and Senator Biden, who they're all getting sworn in today. But, of course, we're expecting them to take positions in the Obama administration. And so someone else is going to fill their seat, right?
Right. Well, you have a total in the 111th Congress on Tuesday, you have a total of 13, well, not Tuesday. See, this is where it gets confusing. There should be a total of 13 new senators taking office this year. But then you have to subtract, right, Joe Biden's replacement. He's going to be vice president. Hillary Clinton, she'll be secretary of state. Salazar will be interior. Clinton and Biden, we know, will be senators on Tuesday because Clinton has said that she will remain in office technically until she's approved, until she's confirmed as Secretary of State. That doesn't mean she'll participate as a senator. She probably won't because that won't really be appropriate from the standpoint of a separation of powers. But she will be a senator. Biden just won re-election in Delaware as a senator at the same time as winning election as vice president. So he will have to be newly sworn in sometime between now and the 20th, one assumes he'll resign as senator. So a total, most likely, of 13 new senators. How many new senators are actually sitting in their seats on Tuesday remains to be seen. Of course, you also have Burris. You also have the replacement for Clinton. Probably won't be there on Tuesday, but no one knows who that's going to be. And don't forget about Minnesota with Al Franken and Norm Coleman, the incumbent. That race isn't quite settled yet.
Right. So there's lots of questions about who's actually going to be in the Senate as they move forward on big issues like the stimulus package. There have been some leaks about what the Obama team is thinking of. But there's also it's clear that there's some resistance in the Senate to passing anything quickly.
Well, the Senate Democrats, especially, and to an extent the House Democrats, had hoped to do something very quickly and have it on the president's desk, basically waiting for him when he walks in the Oval Office on January 20th for the first time to get that bill signed, waiting for the new president, like his first official act kind of thing. Republicans in the Senate who do have the power to slow things down if they stick together are starting to lay down markers that they don't think that a bill that could be up to $1 trillion in size, maybe not quite that big, but anyway, big, that it should not be something that moves through onto the Senate floor and moves through that through the Congress without close consideration. So what that means is close consideration and hearings, which is what they're talking about, that's code for slow this down, which is exactly what they intend to do. And now you're hearing Democrats saying that they don't think that their dream of getting this on the desk by January 20th is really going to happen either. So it looks like slowdown is the watchword there.
Okay, here we go for 2009. Todd Zwillick, thank you.
It's going to be exciting.
Todd Zwillick is a reporter from Capital News Connection, and he joined us from Washington, D.C.
Go, go, Todd Zwillick! You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.